What is up, everybody, and welcome back to the Salt Lake City Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Nilsson, and big news coming into Salt Lake City this week that we are, in fact, getting an NHL team. I'm super stoked about it. I'm excited to become a hockey fan, as I know a lot of people around the Valley are, and I have a feeling just like a lot of the sports that we already have in Salt Lake, we're going to wrap our arms around it and love it for all that we have. So super excited for this new moment in Salt Lake sports. And because I knew that this was likely going to be happening, I wanted to have someone come on the podcast who knows the most about it. So I reached out to my friend Porter Larson, who is an executive producer and host at ESPN 700, the talk show and radio station and podcast that covers all of the things sports in Utah and Salt Lake City. And you're in for a doozy. We cover so many topics in this episode, everything from the NHL coming to Utah, potential MLB team, future of the Jazz and what the rebuild looks like, the University of Utah being in the Big 12 and what that looks like and what we should be looking for, as well as being now in the same conference again with our biggest rival, the BYU Cougars. Then also leaning into the Olympics and what is that path towards getting the Olympics be here and how this is all part of Ryan Smith's big elaborate plan. Also, Porter's an awesome guy. Hearing about him growing up in Camas, going down to Dixie / Texas, Utah Tech to try to play basketball and ended up reporting on it and created a job for himself. So lots of really good tidbits. If you want to catch up on Utah sports, this is the best place to do it. If you're a sports enthusiast, a Salt Lake enthusiast, or just want to know what's going on, we have a lot of great stuff going on for you. So excited to share this one with you. Check it out. And yeah, enjoy. Yeah, I mean, there's like so much sports going on in Utah right now. And I feel like every month there's some sort of new headline, whether it's NHL, whether it's MLB, whether it's the Olympics, whether it's Utah going to the Big 12 this year. And so I feel like it's just like a good time to have almost like a let's catch everybody up, see what's going on, see where the excitement is, see where, I mean, the road to go. And I didn't think of anybody else besides the Porter Larson himself.
You didn't reach out to Ryan Smith first?
I may or may not have tried desperately via four different channels, but well, it's always fun because like there's people, I mean, let's use Ryan as an example.
Right.
I have no personal connection with Ryan. It would be one of those like 3 or 4 degrees of separation, text a friend of a dad of a dentist and like maybe, but at the end of the day, like it's not going to be coming from the right way for him to be like, yeah, I would want to be on this random podcast from Salt Lake.
Totally.
I did get a intro to, and I guess that one got shot down pretty hard by his PR team. And my guy was like, you just have to get it directly to him. Like anything else is going to go through his team. I was like, okay, fine.
Usually those teams just shoot it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not a yes, unless it's a no, it's a no until it's a yes.
Right.
And I had a couple of people, cause I want to sit down with Gail. Cause like, I mean, Gail and Larry and everything that they've done for the city, such a great story, but obviously someone harder to get in contact with. So there's so many people that I want to, and like, there's this whole other like caliber of people that I want to have on. Like, I mean, kind of, we talked like the Tony Finaus, I mean, the Ryan Smiths, the Colin Sextons, and kind of a little bit more of the faces behind things. But I feel like as valuable as those are, it's also good to have the people who are more in the weeds and more understand the topic,
right,
and like have that more of that desire to talk about it because they spend so much time with it.
Yeah. And just spending so much time in those circles, right. Speaking with the journalists that are following Ryan Smith around every day, like it's existing in that ecosystem. It gives you a good perspective on what's going on. And you mentioned all of the things, the overarching theme of sports in Utah continues to grow. Right. And it's not just historically the Olympic sports, the extreme sports. It's now football, basketball, hockey is coming to Salt Lake City. Right. So, I think it's always been like a branding thing, state of sport, right?
Yes.
But it's always kind of been skiing.
Yeah. It's like outdoor sports, like
mountain biking,
like sporting, right? Not like sports.
It's now because of these people who are motivated to see it in their city, having the resources to do it, having the money to do it.
Yeah. Usually,
making it happen. And right. Like Utah wasn't the next on the list for the NHL. They weren't saying, oh, we want Salt Lake City. It was Ryan Smith being a multi-billionaire and going out and making it happen and going out and making sure that things are ready for when something goes down, he can strike, right?
Yeah.
Having the legislators in line and on the same page as you, that's something that Oakland couldn't figure out. That's something that, you know, Portland, Nashville, all these other teams that are looking for either base or all these cities that are looking for baseball or hockey, a little behind on.
Yeah.
Right. And Ryan did a really good job of getting all the pieces aligned before the opportunity was there. And then at that point, you just got to sign on the bottom line and barring any unforeseen circumstances, I'm not sure when this podcast will come out. It's going to happen, right?
Yeah.
It's a board of governors vote away from being official. I'm told that the Coyotes players are already planning on, and a lot of the staff are already planning on coming out here for a press conference or some sort of event right after the season, which they're finishing tonight.
It's like, so what's the press conference?
I wonder what it is, right?
Exactly.
So it's been impressive to see him be able to have everything in alignment, right? And be ready to strike when the iron's hot and make this happen. And you talked about it. Larry Miller did it as well. Larry had to take out loans for money that he didn't really have. It was a guy who had a dream and went out and made it happen. And with sports, you get more of, not that it doesn't happen in some other parts of business, right? There are people that are very passionate about restaurants and clubs and whatever. But with sports, like, you grow up with a fandom. You grow up passionate fans of these sports teams. And Ryan, from a young age, has always talked about having a basketball team and having a hockey team in Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. It just so happens he became a billionaire and now has the resources and the connections to make it happen. And it's exciting. It should be exciting for sports fans here. It should be exciting for really any residents here. There is, you know, pros and cons to everything. Yeah, I think there is a conversation to be talked about, and we'll get into this as we go, about developing and growing responsibly and in a way that it, you know, doesn't leave all of the great things about this state, which are, you know, not in real estate and not in
it's like almost the antithesis of it. Yeah.
Right, exactly. There is a weird dynamic where so much of this state is outdoor space and you know, I think there's a stat that it's like 67% federal land in Utah, which that's a different debate. That's a different conversation, but it's land that we can go and use. Right. And you go around the state and you're seeing golf courses built everywhere. You're seeing people trying to build ski resorts everywhere. And you're seeing downtown what is going to be a huge, huge change, which, yes, it's going to revitalize that area. It's going to give us new arenas, but it may also push people out of homes. It may, like, there's a huge conversation around that that is not just cool sports team money to be made, right? And I do hope that we don't lose sight of those conversations, but we can also acknowledge how cool it is that there is a Utahn who has pride in this city and the state and wants to see his dream come to a fruition. But there's a whole bunch of different conversations that come off of that just because of how big it is, right? How big of a story it is and how intertwined it is.
Yeah.
We talked about that, right? The venues and the arenas. This is also part of trying to get the Olympics here. It's not just getting hockey here. They're trying to get the Olympics back here in 2034. So, there's a lot of overarching conversations on public transit and sustainable and reasonable growth that have to go alongside,
for sure,
you know, the cool conversations that we're having that aren't very much.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to, like, that point of Ryan where, I mean, obviously he's proven himself with Qualtrics. I mean, one of the biggest exits in Utah history, but then he goes on to, like, enter this other level of, like, oh, I want to be the backbone of bringing professional sports into Utah, bring the Olympics back into Utah, work with legislatures, work with developers, work with investors. And all at the same time, having everybody agree, like you said, because there's other places that couldn't figure it out.
Right.
But then also to the point where it's like almost, I mean, in the words of Lil Wayne, like, real G's move in silence like lasagna. And, like, nobody knew until the Coyotes were like, hey, by the way, we just told we're probably relocating. And everyone's like, wait, what?
We heard rumblings of it. We heard whispers of it. But the thought was, like, 3-4 years, right? NHL figures some things out. Major League Baseball figures out Oakland and Tampa and their CBA as well. You know, NHL is we thought the expansion would probably happen before a team moved.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, the officials in Arizona and the voters in Arizona, coincidentally, in Tempe, said, nope.
Yeah.
In Utah, the legislators don't really care how you vote. So they decided it was happening. It's happening.
Yeah.
And Ryan Smith was able to get the sign off there and it's happening.
Yeah. Let's, before we get too much more into it, kind of want to give everybody a taste of kind of like who you are, where you came from and all of that. So, I mean, Utah native, grew up a little bit northeast of here in, I mean, Camas, Oakley area. I mean, what was that like? What got you into sports? What kind of like set that stage for you growing up?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up with a family that were completely invested in sports. My mom was a OG captain of the U.S. snowboard team. Before you could snowboard, right? Yeah. When it was like frowned upon and the resorts wouldn't let you on, she was winning national competition
in
the mid-80s and early 80s in snowboarding, right? Yeah. She had to use like a split board where it looked like skis. And when she got up on the mountain, she could clip it together and snowboard without getting caught. Like,
interesting.
Very OG stuff, right? Yeah. So I grew up with the extreme sports side of that. My dad was a football player, football coach. So the sports angle was from the beginning, not really by choice. I was born into that, right? But then growing up in Oakley, Utah, in the foothills of the Uinta Mountains, I just got to wake up every morning and walk outside into what is like one of the great last frontiers in the country, in the world, right? And I just always felt like a bone deep connection to those mountains, to this outdoor space, right? Mm-hmm. And growing up there was able to just completely embrace that and, you know, play football, play basketball, had a few opportunities to try to play some college hoops. Was in Ephraim for a semester at Snow College and was on the practice squad. Shout out to Coach Nielsen down there. Went to St. George trying to chase those same dreams. Mm-hmm. They recruited a bunch of really good guards that year. So I ended up covering the team, right?
Yeah.
Instead of playing for the team. And
was that like the first time you ever were like in an official place of following sports?
Okay. I mean, I always was someone who, like, the second Twitter came out, I created an account to tweet about basketball, right?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I every time I think I have a guest that I like want to have, I'll always like put some feelers out with some friends. Right. So I have this like group text with my friends and I was like, do you guys know who Porter Larson is? Like, yeah, sports Twitter. What's up? And I was like, all right, okay, good. Like, check.
Right.
And so it's funny that you say that because that's kind of how people know of you.
I was kind of doing it already for free for my own like entertainment. I wanted to at some point cover sports in some form, but I was just a student in St. George. They didn't have much of like a sports journalism department, but they had a school newspaper. They had a school radio station.
Yep.
So I went to the school newspaper director, went to the school radio station director and was like, hey, let me do sports. And they gave me like free rein
sure.
to do sports. And by the end of that year, I was calling games on the local television station there.
That's amazing.
I was doing full broadcasts at the radio station and writing for the newspaper, right? And they gave me a scholarship. I wasn't getting get a scholarship to play hoops, so I ended up getting one to cover it. And you know, that's the start of that. Ended up transferring up to the U to finish school and got an internship with ESPN 700. And it's been 7 years covering Utah football, Jazz, RSL, whatever it may be, full time. But all through that, while I've been so like my professional and working life has been all so tied into sports, I've still remained like unexplainably tied to the mountains. Like every time I clock out, I leave and go up City Creek. I leave and go up Mill Creek Canyon. I leave and go up into the mountains.
Yep.
Hopefully the Uintas if I have enough time. And I don't think that's ever going to stop, right? So there's a tie that it just feels so much deeper than, you know, I just grew up here.
Yeah.
It's a place that I really do think is special. And it goes back. I talked about my mom and like my direct family ties. But on my dad's side, my great-grandfather was actually a mountain man hired by the Mormon Church. Uh-huh. He was hired by Joseph Smith and Brigham Young to go and scout land. His name was Jackson Redden.
Interesting. Yeah.
And years before the pioneer companies, the Vanguard company was the first one to do it, traveled across the plains. He came across alone with his dog and his horse. Got as far west as Carson, Nevada, almost to the California border. Mm-hmm. There's a place called Jack's Valley, if folks are familiar with that area. That's Jackson Redden. They called him Return. That's what Joseph Smith and Brigham Young called him. That was his nickname, because they sent him out into like their craziest, dangerous jobs, and he'd return every time.
Which is like I always think of things like that. I'm like, I could do it. I was an Eagle Scout, but it's one thing to go drive up a road, to go to a trailhead and go this, but be like, I have to bushwhack every step of this. Think about how I'm getting down and through everything.
And this was in 1841 was the original time that he decided to go west. And at that point he was in Nauvoo, but it was a mutually beneficial relationship because he was also a fugitive wanted in Mississippi for a lot of unsavory things. And he found the church and they said, we need someone to go west. So he's like, I'm on the run.
I'll go as far as I need to.
So yeah, he almost got to the coast as far as 1840. At that time, it was before the Donner Party had gone west. It was before the Pony Express, before the Gold Rush. It was literally a few mountain men, Native Americans and indigenous people here. There was, you know, some recording of Spanish settlers that had gone up into parts of the Uinta Mountains. But other than that, it was the mountain men like my great-great-grandfather and great, I'm missing a great in there.
Yeah.
And he was the first of the Mormon pioneers to see Salt Lake Valley.
Yeah.
And it was just interesting to hear that story. I didn't know about that growing up when I was younger. So when I kind of learned about my family history, my grandmother was adopted, so there was kind of a disconnect there on some of it. I don't have real contact with my grandfather who that relation is through. And I was like, I don't know if I believe in generational ties and like feelings, but it makes a lot of sense if that's like why I feel so tied to these mountains when my blood was literally the first of the pioneers to cross through it. In his journal, he talks about indigenous people telling him to use the Uinta Mountains that we call now as compass, right? Because if you're trying to cross the Rocky Mountains, it's a big wall in front of you. There's one mountain range that runs east and west, and it's the Uintas. Mm-hmm. And he listened to only indigenous people that knew the land and was able to get to Echo Canyon and eventually to Salt Lake. Pretty crazy story.
Yeah.
And like, for me to learn that, it definitely was like, maybe
this is my family then. Okay.
Even if it's not real, those generational ties and stuff, it's a good excuse for it.
No, I love that. I love that you kind of have these like things that connect you back to your heritage and keeps you grounded with it. Cause like, I remember when I spent some time in Oakley, in like Camas area, mm-hmm. I remember I was driving through, like I was going down through Browns Canyon and coming through and I was like, all right, let's think about this. Like this place has been inhabited maybe 100 years, 120 years. And again, like, there's Ken's Cash. There's the road. There's like,
used to work there, by the way.
No way.
The cashier at Ken's Cash.
That would be my plan.
From like age 14 to 16.
That's funny. I would always go there and be like, I just need a snack from civilization. That's where I'm going.
Yep. And penny candies.
Oh, the best. But it's like so funny because like that place is gorgeous. Like I love getting that far out. You can see all of the stars. You walk at night and feels like it's almost day.
Right.
The elk are like doing their mating calls at night and it's terrifying. It's just like so raw. And it's one of, like, to your point, it's like one of the few places where you do feel like that frontier aspect to it.
I mean, I would hear nature out there, right? So you go outside my back door, coyotes, just the craziest noises. And it sounds like it wouldn't be pleasant.
Yeah.
It's so much more pleasant to me than hearing car horns and sirens and all of that. But it is a little bit traveling back in time, which is always been something that I'm attracted to, right?
Yep.
So hopefully get back there. I am living downtown right now. And I know that Salt Lake we talk about Salt Lake growing and becoming this big little city.
Yep.
For me, it's funny because Salt Lake's not a little city. This is like, I come to Salt Lake and I'm walking downtown and I'm like, anxious about how tall the buildings are.
Yeah.
I've never been to New York. I've been to Los Angeles. So I know what the big cities are, but existing and living in Salt Lake it's a big city.
Oh yeah. I mean, and it's like, I feel like if you're from here, you've kind of been told it isn't that big. And then you've kind of, it's like this, you kill a frog by gradually increasing the heat, not right. throwing in hot water. And so people are just like, oh, it's still a small city, still a small city. You're like, well,
it is getting big though.
Oh yeah. I mean, you look at like, I mean, 111 that Goldman put in, 222 that Goldman put in, yep. you see the new, this skyline has changed so much and there's so many cranes and it's like, hey, like, where's that threshold? Like, where are we calling this?
Yeah.
I mean, especially having, I mean, again, being in Camas and then Ephraim, St. George and here.
I did see technically there's no skyscrapers yet.
Yes.
It's supposed to be like 500 feet plus and we're like right on the edge there.
I know. Cause like I always remember, and this might be one of those like urban legends, but they like couldn't build any buildings taller than like the church office building because of like the earthquake that was always going to come. But then now I heard it's like, hey, we have technology to solve for this. Like, can we just like, you know, just like keep building?
Yeah.
Hey, it's me, the host of the Small Lake City podcast, Eric Nilsson. Hope you're enjoying today's episode. And if you are, make sure to like and leave a review as well as subscribe to the podcast so you can hear more of the great guests that I have coming your way. Also, make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok under the handle Small Lake Pod. Small Lake Pod on Instagram and TikTok. Also, if you prefer video, then make sure to head over to the YouTube channel and subscribe there as well. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
I think they're doing that. I think the building they're building right now, which I'm going to affectionately call Carl's Jr. Tower forever.
Yes.
Because that's where
it's. And if that doesn't tell you exactly
where. That's the tallest building now in Utah. So.
So you come back to Salt Lake, you get this first job here. I mean, it's like so awesome that you're like essentially end up at, I mean, Utah Tech now. Dixie then, and being like, oh, okay, well, I don't get to do this dream I wanted to do. How can I make the best of this and still be
right
here? And then essentially, I mean, calling your career and just being like, I'm just going to keep reporting on this. Be like, hey, I recognize you're doing a good job. How about you keep doing it up here? And just having like, I mean, a life that aligns so well with all of your, I mean, personal interests and everything that you've done. I mean, I can't imagine having a job like that where it's like, I could still go home and watch sports and still be like just as interested, you
right.
know?
That's an interesting balance because it is, you know, it is fun. It's awesome, but it is a job, right? So sometimes I have to balance that where I'm not like forcing myself to watch all the sports. I'm not going overboard in that regard. I know it sounds crazy, but you can burn out from it, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I made a decision a couple years into it, probably pandemic wise, that time frame, right? Because there was no sports going on and I wasn't having fun doing a job where you had to really stretch to talk about sports.
Yeah.
I made the decision then to like make sure I have that balance where I'm still having fun when I'm watching the game. I'm still, you know, enjoying being out in those crowds and in those arenas. And if I'm ever not, I'll just go off in the mountains somewhere, right? Yeah. But I've made sure I found that balance. And doing it in Utah, I think is important because I don't know if I could find that balance if I didn't have this escape, this land that I know so well to go out every day and enjoy. I don't know if I would be able to find that balance. So
for sure.
I actually almost feel like, although I've had certain few opportunities elsewhere to go cover different sports or different teams, I've never had a inclination or a motivation to leave Salt Lake because cover a team I'm familiar with. You know, a lot of my family grew up loving these teams and these universities. So there was never a real motivation to leave. And I guess that's kind of what's kept me here is that it's a good place to be able to have that balance.
And it's like an interesting thing too, because like a lot of people would be like, well, why? What if you got the opportunity to go to LA and cover right. like all of that? Or what if you could go to—
And I love LA. I love Santa Monica. I go there every, almost annually for the Rose Bowl.
Right? Exactly.
But if I'm there for 48 hours, I start to feel a little crazy.
And like what I was going to say is it's like, it's also like, this is no longer like something you have to settle for. Like there's a lot of things going on and a lot of cool like beats to cover. Like I right. do want to be here.
That's the other part. It's not like, why would you cover sports in Utah? I'm like, well, I also do some work when these kids are done playing college. Shout out to my good buddy, Skylar Main, in the draft preparation, right? So Britton Covey, Zach Moss, all these guys you hear, the second they're done with college football, they're done at the University of Utah. The time between that and the draft, the combine, pro days, they spend with my buddy Skyler, and I helped with a lot of that, right? And it's not something where you're settling for covering mediocre sports. We have the most NFL draft picks per capita in the world, right? It's football, so in the country. Yep. More NFL players per person come out of Utah than anywhere besides Florida, Alabama, and Mississippi. Even beats Texas. Even beats California.
Those two were the ones that were going through my head. And I was like, yeah, that checks out.
And you have an NBA team who they're in a down year. They're in a down process. But I hope that fans understand why that is. I hope that they understand that in today's NBA, the middle is purgatory. The middle is where you want to avoid. There's a very intentional reason for what they're doing now. And they actually have a potential of being really, really good if this plan comes to fruition. They're bringing in a hockey team that is in kind of a similar position. They're not good right now, but they have a lot of really young pieces that are good. They have a lot of draft picks, a lot of assets to, if they hire the right people, if they bring the right people in into the organization, they can be awfully good in 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
BYU, Utah, moving to the Big 12, having, you know, at least for now, with whatever college football looks like in the next 5-10 years, a good landing spot with access to the college football playoff. Real Salt Lake is a team who won an MLS Cup in the last 15 years. I mean, this isn't a market where you feel like you're stretching when it comes to sports coverage. It may have been that way, you know, before I would say 2000, but around really the Jazz run, you go 1995, 96, 97, the Jazz are in the finals. University of Utah is in the Final Four. 2 years after that, the Olympics are here. 2 years after that, the University of Utah hires Urban Meyer, right? They go to the Fiesta Bowl and go undefeated. They bring in Kyle Whittingham right after that. He goes to the Sugar Bowl and goes undefeated 4 years later. RSL wins the MLS the year after that, right? The year after that, Utah gets admitted into the Big 12 or the Pac-12. And then we've had this steady, steady growth where this is a legitimately awesome sports market. And to enter it in, it was about 2017, and have my whole career so far covering this story and this sports market's been, it's been awesome. And like you said, it's by no way, settling for anything. Yeah, I could go cover the Knicks, who I'm a big fan of, go to some big market and live in a big city with all the stars, but you're going to get just as many cool storylines in a place like this, and especially at a time like this.
Yeah. No, I mean, I totally agree. It's been fun to see. I mean, it's fun to have like that, oh my gosh, timeline of Utah sports. And then it's like,
sometimes if you don't bring that timeline out, you don't realize how cool it was for that 10, 12 years.
No, it's so interesting. I do kind of want to pick them all apart a little bit one by one, but and kind of start with, because it's interesting because Utah doesn't have a big hockey presence, which is wild to me because we are a winter capital, greatest snow on earth.
We've had the Olympics here.
Yeah. Like I've never understood that. Like I remember when I did summer sales in Texas, like, you know, I mean, they do it here now, but they do it in like Texas and other schools where I have signs outside the house of like, my son plays football, did this. And I'd see these hockey signs. I was like, the hell you mean you play hockey? This is Texas. And then understood more as it came by. I was like, okay, like I get it, but like, why don't we have this? Like my sister played hockey all growing up with boys and like, I saw it, but like, again, like I don't really have any close friends that played hockey in the same way where it is in all these other markets. So I'm so excited that we have another reason to get more excited behind it and support that with the NHL coming.
And this is a conversation that's happening in like all sports right now, right? We're talking about women's basketball having a moment. It's having a moment because there's infrastructure in place. There's support behind it. There's something there. There's a starting point. You don't have it until you have a starting point, right? You don't have a hockey market until you have hockey here.
We
soccer was the same way. How much soccer was in Utah before RSL? There were big schools had a soccer team. I played two. I was in 2A. There was like a couple schools that had soccer teams. Roland Hall. Our school actually, I think, created a soccer team not long before I was there. So it was starting, it was becoming a thing, but you know, it was a lot of clubs, right? As far as the universities go, they had a club team, not a soccer team, yep. Not an NCAA team. And once that institution is in place, they have an academy, they have fans, they have kids watching their games on Saturdays, wanting to play on Monday and Tuesday. And then you get a community that follows suit. Now, there's always going to be some people, right? There was always a couple kids that played hockey that I knew in Camas, but they had to go travel to Denver to play in these tournaments. They had to go practice and find ice time in Park City at the Olympic Arena, where when no one else was using it, there wasn't a organized infrastructure in place for them to play hockey. So that just, it never grew. It never got the chance to grow. Now that there's a team here, that's going to happen more and more, just like you saw with RSL and with soccer here. But it takes time. That's the other thing, right? It does take time to really get that going. What I don't think will take much time is the fan part.
Oh, no.
I think folks are really excited. And once they see soccer or see hockey in person, it's a different story.
Utahns are some very easily entertained people.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing because hockey is something like because I'm not the biggest sports person. Like I'm not the person who comes home every day and like sees what's on and watches a game.
Right.
But you put me in a hockey arena and I will be the most excited person there.
It's fast. It's physical. It's loud. I have pretty undiagnosed ADHD.
I have diagnosed ADHD. Yeah. I got you.
I'm so ADHD. I don't need the diagnosis. Pretty much where we're at.
You're like, tell me what I don't know.
I don't take medications at all. So I'm like, I'm not interested in necessarily diagnosing it. Pretty sure I got you, doctor.
Yeah.
For me, a lot of times it gets to intermission and then I forget that I'm watching a hockey game. That part is adjusting to that. They take like two full 15 plus minute breaks during the game. Mm-hmm. As a guy who watches basketball and then fast forward right to the third quarter. That's something I have to adjust to. But during the game, it is as entertaining, as fast, as fun as any sport that I've watched. And I am not a hockey guy either. I'm definitely not a hockey expert. Like I've had to do with soccer, I'm going to have to start learning and watching it because I'm going to have to start covering it.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to do that as well because it is on TV. Sometimes it can be hard to follow because it is so fast. The puck is so small. If you don't know the rules, it's confusing at first. But once you go in person, I think you're going to have a different feel of the sport. You're going to go back and you're going to watch them on TV. You're going to go buy the jerseys. That's the other part that I'm curious about though.
Yeah.
Marketing, image, and a first impression are huge in sports. So what Ryan Smith and what this group unveils, as we know, the Coyotes are not coming in that form, which I think is unfortunate because that's an awesome logo.
I do like it.
What they unveil is going to be really important because that is a huge part of today's sports world is the product you're putting out, the digital part of it, right? And the brand. People want to wear your brand. Yep. They're not going to wear it if it's ugly.
Exactly.
Had some lessons there in that regard in the last few years.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how they go about that because it is a whole new franchise. They don't have the Jazz Mountain jerseys they can lean on to look at. They've got to build something from the bottom up and seeing what comes to fruition there is something I'm interested to see.
Yeah. And it's interesting to see kind of these examples that we've had in recent memory of cities getting an NHL team. I mean, we have Vegas has wrapped their arms around every chance.
They've done really good with that marketing, with that product. Yeah.
Like every single
they're
person
good too, which
always helps. And so I'm excited for that because I do feel like Utahns there's always these side conversations and get togethers and gatherings or whatever, where it's like, if we could have another pro sports team, what would it be? Cause it couldn't be the NFL for obvious reasons and kind of going down that talk track. And now it's like actually here. It's like, well, are you ready to go to games? Are you ready to support this? And fundamentally, I think so. Because like when I was living in Seattle, that was a fun sports city because, I mean, if there's a soccer game on, everybody had their scarves on. If everybody wears Seahawks colors on Friday, like it's just so embedded in it. And I think Utah is ready to become that sort of city. And I mean, you look at it now, I mean, Utah has like a lot of reasons to be divided in a lot of ways, but there's things that bring, well, I guess Utah and BYU sports bring people equally as apart, but everybody loves the Jazz. And so the more that we can have these like iconic teams and brands bringing people together and saying like, I don't care. Like, do you want to watch the game? Do you want to go do this? And just something else to have a little bit more of that community within it.
Right. And I like that you bring that up because it is a team that can be statewide. It can be everyone in this metro can come and support this team. And yeah, it doesn't have to include a rivalry or any of that vitriol. I'm excited how well they come together. Not at first. Mm-hmm. At first, you know, first season, they're going to sell that place out. There's going to be a lot of excitement. But as we've talked about, this is a team that's in a rebuild. They're not going to be great for a few years. So if it's a bad hockey team without a history in this city, without the 30 plus years of Jerry Sloan and Quinn Snyder and now Will Hardy and Larry Miller and Ryan Smith, without this built-in fandom, what does it look like after 2 or 3 years? What is the staying power? And I think that will actually tell us a lot about these other questions we have about baseball, about the Olympics, about people have mentioned football. I would be head over heels. Don't think that's happening.
No.
I don't know if you guys have seen Utah in January, but I am interested because it will tell us a lot about how ready Utah is for the real big time. Not just supporting one team in the Jazz, not just supporting your college in BYU or Salt Lake, but supporting a complicated mix of several different professional sports franchises in a way that Denver has, that Seattle has. Without having quite those populations, I'm curious to see how that goes.
And I'm also curious too, because it's interesting that we have our face, and obviously we don't know like the timelines of both of them, but I mean, looking ahead and seeing an NHL and an MLB team, and like with NHL, like there's a lot of momentum and traction in NHL right now. So many people are becoming fans. Like one of my good friends who lives in Portland, he went back home to visit his family in Minnesota, took his wife and two kids to a hockey game. His wife fell in love with it. His kids were screaming because they didn't want to leave. And so now they're like diehard hockey fans.
Right.
And so you kind of see that happening, but I feel like the optimistic trajectory that the NHL has, it's almost the opposite with the MLB. And so, and also with the MLB, it's so much more of a marathon of a season and
show. Very different business. Yeah.
And so I'm curious to how much we can not just like support both, but what's going to drive success for both of those teams here and make them feel supported.
Right. And it's not just about putting fans in the seats, right? It's about corporate money. It's about contracts. It's about the availability of all of those things in a market. It dries up. It runs out at some point, right?
Yeah, so, look at the Pac-12.
Right. If you have 12 pro sports teams in your market, but you don't have enough restaurants and insurance companies to sponsor them, those teams are going to go under. Those teams are going to relocate. They're not going to last long. So that's why I do think that this is a very good litmus test, this hockey experiment for baseball, right? Even though they're in very different places as far as the leagues go, I think that's more of a overarching conversation about the sport, about the business of the sport. The market's going to dictate that differently in every city. And Utah has a decent baseball following, probably better than hockey, probably better than soccer for a while.
You lived in St. George. I mean, to me, when I go to St. George, this is a baseball city. Because of weather and a lot of things. And so I feel like there is, because I completely agree. I think there's more people, if you're to poll the state, be like, how many of you played baseball? How many of you played hockey? I think baseball would be a resounding larger number. It's like there's so many reasons to say both would succeed for different reasons.
And that's why I think it's interesting that Ryan got this to the finish line so quickly. Because as I mentioned, those corporate dollars do dry up. Those, you know, these things happen in very like unpredictable timelines, right? Sometimes an owner of a team is going bankrupt and has to liquidate his assets for reasons that you have no clue of, a la RSL a couple years ago, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reasons where the wheels could start turning for a change in baseball. And the Millers are ready for that as far as, you know, striking when the iron's hot like Ryan did. But I wonder if there was a race to the finish line because they know this market is somewhat limited just because of how many people are here, right? How many sponsorships there are available out there. I think that getting to the finish line first is actually huge, because for the millers now, there's less for the taking in those regards, right? There's just not as much on the table to make the MLB, to make, you know, the decision makers there attracted to your market, mm-hmm. because there's one other competitor now here in the NHL. So I do wonder if, even though a lot of folks see these as like parallel trains, right? Where we're going towards NHL, we're going towards MLB, and they're working together. I almost feel like there may be a pull in the opposite direction, where because Ryan made this happen so quickly, we may now not see baseball here because there isn't that incentive. There isn't that urgency. There is now another pro sports team here. Now, if it's a resounding success and there is a lot of money on the table and this is a team that's winning a title in a couple years, then baseball will be like, hell,
yeah,
Salt Lake's burgeoning.
Yeah.
We'll go there.
Especially with Ryan. Like,
but we don't know that yet.
Exactly. And it's like, in kind of going into something we talked about before, I mean, Ryan is such a unique situation where, let's say, NHL is a massive success. MLB's like, hey, we see this. Like, if we can make this happen, let's do it. Like, Ryan is so much more able to personally do it than, I mean, with Larry being like, okay, I will take loans, I will do this, I think this is a good thing. And that, I mean, translates to speed, because if you're the one making the decisions on everything and you have the money to do it, then there's no other person that needs to really get involved. And so, yeah, I'm curious about how it's going to go.
Now, the timeline with baseball is different because they don't want to expand right now.
Yeah.
They want to figure out Tampa Bay, figure out Oakland, and then they have a potential lockout and CBA they have to figure out. It's not until after that they're going to add another team. And for that reason, the Millers didn't have the option to expedite the process, right? You can't jump all of those things in line.
Yeah.
The pro baseball world is way too big to have them adjust to the whims of a family who wants baseball in Daybreak, right?
Yeah.
That's something that would happen in 2030 or so. So there's also now, if you're the Millers, you're looking at the Jazz, you're looking at the NHL team, you're looking at properties that you used to own, and you're really hoping that they succeed and succeed well. Because if they don't, you're not getting a baseball team, right? If this NHL thing is not a success, if the Jazz are in the dumps for the next 3 years and this rebuild doesn't work at all, this market's not going to have the appetite for more sports. Now, if BYU and Utah go and have success in the Big 12, if we do secure the Olympic bid, stay tuned next month for that. Mm-hmm. If NHL and the Jazz is a net positive over the next 5 or 10 years, there's a much likelier scenario of baseball coming here.
Yeah.
So it's also interesting that they're the Millers, who have all this ready, who have a plan, kind of at the mercy of all of these other things which are out of their control and which are with people who now own properties they used to.
Yeah. It's got to be interesting to see them and see this next wave of things happening from kind of the world that they walked into and how much has changed. And I'm curious too, transition over to the Big 12 conversations. I mean, I'm curious from your perspective of what you think this is going to mean outside of us being one of the best football teams in the conference and us traveling a lot more.
It is going to be different. I'm going to miss the LA and Seattle, and
it was a pretty great travel road trips.
The Pac-12 was perfect for that. I am excited to see some of these college towns that I've never been to, like Oklahoma State and Boone Pickens Stadium is a historic venue, right? There's some cool parts about the Big 12, but you're going to have to adjust to the travel. You're going to have to adjust to this calendar, which for me is guy who's on pregames. Going to have to be up at like 7 a.m. for pregame shows pretty often. That'll be an adjustment. But the football, you got to be really optimistic if you're a Utah fan, especially in 2024, 2025. You have a team coming back that has every tool in the toolbox to win that conference. Yes. Will they? That's a
that
different
up
question.
To
up to health, up to a whole bunch of different variables. And I do want to let Utah fans know that, maybe didn't watch Big 12 ball or some of the other Pac-12 teams, Kansas State's going to be good. Kansas is actually going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
Arizona looked pretty good at the end of the year. I know there's some things that have changed there in the time since. You always have to be up to play your rival in BYU, whether they're good or not this year. They're going to play you.
It's
really
always a different game.
There's teams that are going to make it tough on you. Mike Gundy and Oklahoma State are still in the Big 12. He's as consistent in that conference as Kyle Whittingham has been in the Pac-12.
That's, yeah, a good comparison.
Not going to be an easy out on any given Saturday. So I do think that they're in a position where they can be really, really good. But we're also in a kind of a weird spot with Utah where it feels like kind of a last stand for what they have right now, right? Whittingham is no more than 5 years away from retirement.
Yeah.
Sam Rising is in his seventh senior year, right? Grant Keithy, you look at their roster and they're very much lining up to go into this first 12-team playoff intentionally. But it also does kind of feel like after that, not sure what it looks like. I don't think Kyle retires after this year. But I don't think there's a huge window after that. And what college football looks like at large 5-10 years down the road, I think is still in question. You have a good landing spot right now with the Big 12.
Yep.
But there's a lot of rumors that that's not something that's going to be here in 5 to 10 years, right? Just like the Pac-12 was. That was it wasn't the only thing that's going to happen when it comes to conference realignment. And I think it was jarring for a lot of folks because the Pac-12 literally fell under all the way.
Yeah.
Outside of the two schools that are remaining there.
Yeah.
But it wasn't new. The WAC, the Big East, you go back through the history of college sports. This is
the conferences that have disappeared.
Right. This is not new. And it's a trajectory that's going towards some sort of college football super league. And that's going to look a whole lot different than the Big 12. And that's not that far on the horizon. If you talk to folks like Kyle, that's kind of the thought that this is the direction that college sports is going in. And so short term, you should be really excited about the Utes in the Big 12. Long term, I don't know what the Utes look like. I don't know what the Big 12 looks like. I don't know what college football looks like, which is kind of crazy to say as someone who gets paid to cover college football. But there's no other answer because they're in courtrooms every other day. They're going through antitrust lawsuits that are going to dictate the direction this goes. And we don't know what direction that is until we get more info.
Yeah. I mean, so much dust to settle because, I mean, with the Pac-12 going under, I mean, it's not like that's it. Everything's done.
We're good now. It's just going to be normal for now.
The domino effect.
It's not over.
And we don't even know what dominoes are falling, how and when.
Right.
Until they start to. So, yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic about it. I think it's going to be fun to have, because, like, I mean, we were in the Pac-12 long enough. You're like, okay, yeah, okay, this again. We're back down here, back to do
this.
They're
running the Pac-12 too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a historic conference, and Utah ran, it's at least in football, they ran that thing for the last half decade.
Oh, yeah. We showed up and
got to feel good.
I mean, I can't think of a season, because I was talking to someone about this, because, like, my pipe dream for Utah is to once again become a Nike school. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, if you're like, proposing Utah to, I mean, it could be whatever partnership you want to. It's like, look at our football team. We're one of the few teams that has consistently been in the top 25 for the past decade.
But you look at the modern football, and I like to look at the playoff era. Mm. It's because it's a little more parity. It's a little
apples
more fair.
Apples, yeah.
Gives you a good mark of delineation, and it kind of coincided with Utah coming to the Pac-12. And I'm going to pull up that list.
Please.
I'm not going to pull up the list because I don't know where my phone is. If you look at the all-time appearances in the college football playoff, right? The top 25, where it's the committee that's picking the final four, the appearances in that ranking, it's Georgia, Alabama, Oregon, Ohio State, Clemson, and Utah. Those are the top seven schools. And I didn't bring up the list, so you're going to have to maybe test me on this and fact check me. It's a very close combination here of those seven schools with the most appearances in that ranking. They are the most consistent school on the West Coast outside of maybe Oregon. Mm-hmm. And year in, year out, they're competitive in a Power 5 conference and they're going to continue to be so. So yeah, there's no reason to believe that's going to stop anytime soon as well with the Big 12 addition. So I'm excited to see how they continue that without a Kyle Whittingham. But again, that's a conversation for a few years down the road.
Big shoes to fill. I'm curious how those are going to go too. And like, there's always one fact that, I mean, they always say it like every game over the past 10 years, but for some reason it's like never made an impact on me until like now. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you go to any football game, it's like, oh, we just sold out for the number, whatever 60 something game in a row. And
every game since 2010 season opener.
Yeah. And like, cause you could look at it, like, cool, everybody shows up to games, we don't have sports, whatever. But then you start to look at all these other places where, again, they have a down year or they're not ranked or they start to have something bad happen and fans aren't there. I mean, you see that, like, the one that always comes to mind to me is like Florida State. Like, if they're doing great, it's jam packed. If they're not doing great, it's empty. And so I think that's the side of Utah fans that I'm excited to see.
I did miss a school. Okay. So as of the end of this last regular season, the most appearances in the college football playoff top 25, tied at the first is Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, Oklahoma. That was the one I missed. Notre Dame, Georgia, Utah. So those are the top six.
And it's like, you look at all of those and you're like, now which one of you doesn't feel like it belongs?
Right.
And it's Utah.
It is Utah. They've proven they belong, but they now want to... And this is Kyle's last stand. It prove that they don't belong, but that they can go out and compete with those teams, not in a Sugar Bowl, not in a one-off Fiesta Bowl. They want to go do it in the playoff. And that, with this expanded playoff, they're going to have at least a good chance to get there. And that's an exciting prospect for fans here.
Yeah, and especially like you're talking about with the roster coming back, and I feel like Cam's going to come out with a chip on his shoulder and really want to prove something. I mean, it's his last, like literally his last stand before he potentially goes to the league. And he is always someone that delivers under pressure. Well, not always delivers under pressure, but
pretty consistently.
Yeah, pretty consistently.
When he hasn't, it's usually been because of injury, to be fair.
Yeah, no, completely right. So I think it's, again, with the increase of odds of getting in the playoff because it's expanded, mixed with our unique situation we find ourselves in with like an objectively easier conference. Granted, there's still people to be worried about.
Right.
And then have all those three factors. Like, yeah, like stars are aligned. We can probably do this. And if we get, at least we can get to the, I like to think we'd be like a LeBron James of playoffs where it's like, as long as we get in, we'll probably get to the finals, but we'll see.
Zero dark 30 or whatever. LeBron goes into playoff mode.
Exactly.
Which did it last night. He's almost 40. It's still doing it. It's ridiculous. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, they are a team that feels like they, you know, when the pressure's on, they're built for more of that style of football, right? It's physical. You can run the ball. You play good defense, right? It's not a game where it feels like a track meet where you've seen a lot of Big 12 teams go from winning that conference and then go to the playoff and get their doors blown off of them, like Oklahoma, because they don't feel like they have that identity to match up with an Alabama. Utah does feel like they resemble that more, but they still don't necessarily have the five-star kid on every position.
True.
That Alabama has, that Georgia has. So you're still an underdog, but because of the way that Kyle Whittingham builds his teams, physically you match up better, I think, with the teams that you probably would be contending with in a national conversation. Now, you have to get through the Big 12. You have to get through whatever the playoff looks like before that, for that to be a conversation. But yeah, your point is well taken. They do feel, even though they look out of place on that list, they're there for a reason.
Yeah, they're still there.
Because of the idea, the identity and the kind of way they play football.
Totally. And kind of want to pivot. So we talked a lot about near-term stuff with, I mean, the Big 12 being rolled out, NHL staring it in the face. Right. But there's also a lot of traction with long-term more of the Olympics, which sounds like it's part of the Ryan Smith plan of sports in Utah.
Right.
But I mean, what else do you think needs to happen, or it is kind of on this to-do list between now and then to get ready for that?
This is where the earlier conversation of kind of like the responsible growth, the, you know, keeping in mind the parts of our state that are historical and you know, the base of our state of sport, and that way for a reason. This is the part where that comes into play, where, you know, I do want to see Salt Lake put on a good show and put on a good face and be the world stage of sports for that year. I think it would be awesome for me as someone who covers sports. It would be great for the job.
Yeah.
But I also hope that, like it, I think it was in 2001, 2002, it's done responsibly, where, you know, you're not just throwing a gondola in the canyon to get people up to an event, you know, a few times a year. You're not using public funding for a bunch of very private or, you know, very temporary things, right? There's a way that we can look at the Olympics 10 years away and use that momentum, use that money, use that attention that's going to be here, use that influx on the economy to do things that help us beyond 2034 when the Olympics are here, right? Like the investment in public infrastructure and public transport in 2002 is still seen today.
Yeah, tracks, we can front runner.
We can advance upon that. I really wish that this is a much larger conversation than just Salt Lake, but as a country, as it globally, we understood what we had in rail travel, right? There used to be a train that ran through Salt Lake, up Sugar House, up Parley's Canyon into Deer Valley. There used to be a train that did that, by the way. It ran up through Park City, Old Town.
Yeah.
If we had that today, go up the back of the canyon to Guardsman, to the other resorts as well,
we'd be set.
You wouldn't need a gondola. You wouldn't need an extra bus lane. You wouldn't need to fight about it in the state capitol. Like, I hope, this is a lot of wishful thinking here, I hope that specifically rail travel is seen as something that can help the Olympics, that is also a sustainable, a responsible, and common sense approach to solving a lot of the issues we have, both in like a day-to-day thing, air quality, energy, and it can make it very easy and really great for the Olympics, right?
Totally.
I don't know how likely that is. I don't know how real that possibility is. But stuff like that is, you know, the bigger picture questions that we have surrounding the Olympics that I think is really cool. Now, just the games, just zeroing in on getting the Olympics here, that would be awesome for every entity of sports here, every entity of business here. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge benefit to the economy. And there's a much bigger conversation for what it brings to the city. But as we've seen with other Olympics, usually the Summer Olympics that go to like a third world country that granted needs that economy and needs that influx of money, but they go there and they build a giant stadium, yeah, and then it's abandoned, or 40 migrant workers die building it and no one ever hears about it. And then no one ever uses that place for the next 40 years. And you have a giant concrete structure that you just demolished a forest for. And that's it for the next.
And it just crumbles
for eternity,
it
right?
Does it?
I know Salt Lake's not going to do that. Totally. I know that that's not something we have. We already have a lot of the Olympic infrastructure in place, but I just hope that the motivation for the projects that go into the Olympics are also well thought out for the residents and the people who actually live here.
Yeah, and then I was talking with Eva Lopez Chavez earlier this week about it. And I mean, that's kind of like top of mind for her, because again, like, I mean, I think the one that's the most famous is like the Sarajevo Olympics, where
right. They
put all of this stuff in, and then as soon as it was over, just left it behind. Yeah. And I mean, like even in China, when the Beijing games, like they built like the jump to do like the big air jump in like skiing and snowboarding. It's like, we don't need to do all of these things, especially where we already have it. Like do it.
They didn't have snow.
Yeah.
And they did the Winter Olympics there. Now that's also a conversation, right?
Yeah.
That we need to have, because if, you know, if we continue down the path of where we're going, there are a lot of projections that say there's not going to be much snow in Utah in 10, 15 years. Right. And I know that that's a lot of people like, you see the winter last year? Yeah. Two good winters does not offset 50 years of what we're in.
Exactly.
Pretty major drought historically. So that's also a conversation where, and the Olympic Committee's actually made this mandatory for Salt Lake to come here, or for the Olympics to come here, is there is a clean air, basically a bar that we have to cross to bring the Olympics here. We can't just be a smog city the week of the Olympics, or they're not going to do it.
Yeah, like that's not,
that's part of the plan. So, I hope that all of that comes to fruition and is executed with good faith.
Yeah.
Because I do know that putting that in legislation sounds good. Putting that in writing sounds good. Tweeting it out sounds good. A lot of times there is not a lot of good faith execution from the people who run the state. So that's another consideration.
And I do like that, because again, like, there is, I mean, you talk to everyone, no matter their political affiliation, and it's, I mean, a smorgasbord of, we need to do everything right now. And people being like, well, it's been there for so long, it's not going any, like, and it's so funny because, like, to your point, like, legislation has been able to help, private hasn't been able to help, but it's like, how about we hold these Olympics over your head and maybe we can start to come up with some solutions, which I wish that we didn't have to have like this dick / carrot to make us do it. But at the same time, like, as we get fixed, like, it, we'll be okay-ish.
It's hard because I understand the need for growth, for development, for all of these things. But deep down, like, I am a staunch conservationist.
Yeah.
So my interests with the sports stuff that's going on right now and my interests with, like, my real life passions are completely conflicting. It's a weird dynamic to see that.
Yeah.
But there is also a way to develop responsibly. There's also a way where you can do it without causing those issues, right? And I do hope that that's part of the mindset with Orion Smith, with the Olympic Committee, with all these people that are trying to make these things happen. We can do it in tandem, right? I do work with a couple of nonprofits that conserve land, that, you know, try to conserve wildlife. We can get these people in the same rooms, right? We can talk and try to find things in a happy medium where both sides are at least somewhat pleased, right? But, you know, actually making that happen is a different conversation, especially when, you know, you're getting kind of locked out of certain rooms in Capitol Hill, in saying that figuratively, right?
Yeah.
It's not always black and white in how all those operations happen. So it's a weird dynamic, but I have somewhat hopeful optimism that there are people in place that'll hopefully try to keep those folks accountable. Agreed. And hopefully those folks who are trying to make all these awesome changes happen have some motivation to do it responsibly. And especially with Ryan, like, it's a downtown thing, right? It's something where you can do it in the right way without disrupting any, you know, of our natural wonders or anything. So that's a good part about it. I'm interested to see how that all plays out.
Yeah, me too. I mean, a lot of, because again, like, when the Olympics came in 2002, I mean, that's when we got tracks. That's when we got, right, like, the quote spaghetti bowl.
It's all,
like,
intertwined.
It's all of these things helped this foundation for the next round of growth.
And getting that, the renovations at Ricycle Stadium was
huge, yeah.
And the recent ones, part of that was with the Olympics in mind, yeah, right? So it's all intertwined. It's all interconnected, almost to a point where it's so complicated, it's hard to follow. And that's why I'm, like, almost at a loss for words of where to go with all of it, because it is kind of pulling in so many different directions and totally. So intertwined.
No, totally. And I know we've talked about a lot of sports topics, but I mean, I guess kind of the last big one, and obviously just wrapped up with Jazz, not the best season, but like you kind of talked about, I mean, we're rebuilding, we're not planning for this year, not next year, but years from now. I mean, what are you looking forward to, or what do you think kind of those next steps are for the Jazz?
Yeah, with the Jazz right now, they're in a good position to strike, as we talked about Ryan with getting the Coyotes. The Jazz are in a position to get a really good piece, a really good player, because of the assets that they have, right? So many draft picks, bunch of young players, whether it's by trade, whether it's through the draft, they're positioned to be really good in 3, 4, 5 years, right? But in order to get there, they have to make the right moves along this path. Now, the part where you can be optimistic there is that Danny Ainge has done this before. Different way, right? You're in a big market in Boston. You have more resources, more ability to probably lure free agents to you in Boston. So you have to do it differently in Utah.
Yeah.
But Danny Ainge is an executive that has shown the ability to create a championship team. And he's a guy who will do just about anything to do it. We've We've seen him trade Isaiah Thomas the day his sister died, right?
Yeah.
We saw him trade Donovan Rudy within a week. Like, this is a guy who doesn't care what the feelings are in the locker room. He's going to pull the trigger that he thinks makes them a better basketball team. And if he does pull the right strings over the next 2 or 3 years, they have positioned themselves similarly to, I would say, where OKC is a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Right? Where now, because they had all of those top 10, top 15 draft picks, they've got a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They've got all of these young pieces.
Youngest team to ever get a number one seed in the West.
And they're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
They're going to be good for a good while, right? So the Jazz are positioned to be that in a few years. But that is, of course, only accomplished if you hit on these draft picks, if you go out and get that free agent. And the timing of the NBA is so funny that you just never know when that happens. You never know when Luke is going to decide he wants to leave, or, you know, Giannis and the Bucks get bounced in the first round and he's all of a sudden on the trade block. You never know.
Yeah.
You really never know in those scenarios when it comes to pro basketball. So I was at the Jazz end of season media availability, got to talk to Danny for, he took 45 minutes out of his day to just talk about the offseason plans. And that was kind of the main takeaway I got from him, was you can't have a concrete plan, right? You have a blueprint, you have some routes you want to follow, but the NBA is way too unpredictable to think that you're going to have a plan and follow it, because there's going to be a roadblock. There's going to be an opportunity for a player here. There's going to be a player that gets bought out late in the season, maybe when you're just on the cusp of being good, that he might bring you over the edge. So what I got from him is that they want to be versatile. They want to be, have optionality.
Yeah.
And where they are with their contracts, with their salary cap positioning, they're where Danny wants to be. So I'm curious. He said during the press conference that they might go big game hunting this year, which was his thought, or his way of saying either free agent or trade. If we think it's the right deal, we're going to pull the trigger.
And it's nice too with him,
regardless of what that means.
He's not scared to make the decision.
No.
And so it's nice to have someone who's not like this humming and hawing or like hesitancy. He's like, yeah, this person's here. Let's pull the trigger. Let's make this happen.
Right.
And also I think Utah fans are so almost used to the rebuild process. Cause I mean, the D Will AK era that, I mean, made a great run rebuild. And then all of a sudden we had, Rudy and, oh my gosh, why can't I think of his name? Donovan Mitchell. Oh, there we go. Oh my God.
I thought that was who you were going, but I didn't.
You're like, I don't want to embarrass him too much on his own podcast. But, and then we had that and we had a great run and then it's like back. And so I feel like Utah at least has this like memory being like, okay, we've done this enough.
Right.
We can bide. We get it.
A little bit. I think that Jazz fans were also spoiled for so long.
Oh, that's also true.
Right. Being,
let them eat cake.
Now you don't have a title, which is a big omission. But outside of the San Antonio Spurs, over the course of the last 25, 30 years, it's a team that wins as consistently as anybody, right? So you've been kind of spoiled with having John Stockton, Karl Malone, and Jerry Sloan in a consistent franchise for 30 years. This last 10 years has been interesting. Now, Jazz fans always show up. They always are selling out that arena. But I wonder how many of these types of resets, how many of these types of rebuilds they actually can stomach. Right? When you have been good for so long, when you have been competitive every year, you think that that is realistic, when usually that's not how it works. Usually sports are pro, college, high school, whatever level it is, it's cyclical. You're good, you're bad, you go through these cycles, right? For the Jazz, it wasn't that way for 30 years. The only reason that they didn't have titles was because of Michael Jordan. Otherwise, it would have been a hell of a run. So it's interesting to look at it that perspective, because I do think that they're smart. Jazz fans are smart about the game. So they understand what's going on. They know that to get good draft picks, you can't be in the middle. You can't be just competitive. The middle is purgatory in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that Jazz fans are smart enough to understand what's happening, what, you know, job is being undertaken. But I do wonder how patient they are and how many times they can do this. And how many times they can watch Danny Ainge trade Will Hardy's roster halfway through the season when they're kind of overperforming a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's many of those opportunities to go. I think that in the next, you know, 2 or 3 years that they do have to strike while the iron's hot, as we were saying, and really capitalize on all these assets and bring a star here and bring a star here that they can keep here. Right. That's the other part.
Yeah. It's
Donovan and Rudy and that roster, they were a one seed in the West. They were a team that broke a bunch of records. They were really good and just a few pieces away from being a contender, but it's combining the personnel, combining the players with the chemistry, with the off the court stuff. Mm-hmm. And that is something that Danny Ainge can only do so much in that direction. You can draft the right players and they can be the wrong players in the locker room. And
you don't know until everyone's yelling at each other.
Yeah. Which behind the scenes. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, well, it's always funny. Cause like I'm someone who like analytical looks at the numbers, blah, blah, blah. But then there's this whole other aspect of like chemistry that no one really knows except for what's being,
and it's not quantifiable.
Right. And it's like, even with the, I mean, they just announced the Olympic basketball team for this year. And it's funny because, I mean, there's been so many documentaries and things made on it. It's like, oh, like even, I mean, you have like LeBron and Kobe talk about like, yeah, like we're going in as this team that we've always played against each other. We're the best players, but we've never played together.
Right.
And then you go against all these other countries who've been playing together for a decade and they make us look stupid because they have that chemistry. And so, yeah, I totally get that if we pick up the wrong piece and things happen, it sets us back almost, I mean, massively.
Yeah. I mean, you just look at what happened 2 years ago, right? When you traded Rudy and Donovan, you kind of had to at that point because of what had transpired in the locker room behind the scenes. But you also had a window there where if you could have kept things together for another 2 years, you could have signed that third, fourth piece and had a run. Now, because of the way that Rudy's contract was structured and because of the money you were going to have to pay Donovan, that wasn't going to continue regardless. That was going to be a short-term thing because if you look at what Rudy's contract is now, if the Jazz had that plus Donovan plus all the other contracts they had, they would have not been able to sign a free agent. They would have been, their roster would have been that, right?
Yeah.
The team that we saw 3 years ago, that was it. So it would have been a short window, but they would have had a 2-year window to try to sign that piece, to try to get over the hump. And the chemistry wasn't there. So that 4-year window turned into like a 1.5, 2-year window for the Jazz simply because of that chemistry.
Yeah.
That's the next step. And you bring up the Olympic team they just announced. That may be the most talented group of basketball players to ever be collected, including the Dream Team.
Yeah.
And because of that, they're going to be fine. They're that good, right? But that you don't get that... that privilege when you're trying to build a team with a salary cap, with you know, contracts here and there, with player options, with team options on the back end of their contracts. It's so much more complicated. But Danny Ainge has done it before,
totally.
So that's what we're about to find out.
No, I'm excited to watch. I mean, I guess on any other topics of sports, I mean, anything else outside? I mean, we kind of covered everything, but
yeah.
Anything else we should pay attention to? Anything you're following that's worth noting?
No, man, I think we kind of covered. I mean, yeah. We did Utes, Big 12. We went through all of the sports angles in the Olympics, and I think that's kind of summarizes the conversation, is the fact that we can go in all of these different directions and have all of these different things to be excited about in this market right now is fun.
Totally.
Because we've had moments like this before. And if you go back to the late 90s and early 2000s, they were a lot of fun for the sports fans that were here.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping for similar things in the next 5 or 10 years, because they are, you know, they're right there for the taking. And it sounds like a lot of it's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's so much optimism in the air, so much change. If you're a sports fan, you should be foaming at the mouth for everything that's going on. And we're gonna, just got into Q2 of 2024. We got a 10-year run ahead of us of a lot of good things to happen that hopefully echoes the timeline that we went over from late 90s through 2000s to today. So super excited to follow it and be a part of it too. But before we wrap, Porter, I want to ask the two questions I always ask people at the end of the show is, number one, if you could have anybody on the Small Lake City podcast and hear more about them and what they're up to, who would you want to hear from?
Ooh, that is a good question. I need to go through and see who you've had and who you haven't had. You had my friend Julian Caron, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think a fun one would be just from my ecosystem, my sports sphere, a guy who used to work in sports radio, has a rich history here in the state of Utah because he played college football here, he played high school football here, but then also went on to be a Pro Fighter League champion, won $1 million in a fighting tournament, Sean O'Connell.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I was trying to put my brain together. Yeah.
He now is ESPN's commentator. He's the Joe Rogan for the Pro Fighters League. He's not Joe Rogan, but he does the play-by-play for the PFL on ESPN. If cool. You guys recognize the name, or you know, if you've heard of him on he was used to be on ESPN 700.
Got it.
He's done Pac-12 radio for years, but his story is super cool. Local kid, grew up here, played football at the University of Utah, played with Alex Smith, played for Urban Meyer and Kyle Whittingham, and then kind of like I did, wanting to stay connected to sports, started broadcasting, started doing radio, started doing all this. And in the middle of his radio career, he had done MMA before. He was a UFC fighter at one point, but never got to the pinnacle, right?
Right.
He was about to become a dad, in his mid-30s, almost 40 years old, and almost like a storybook type of, a movie type story, just decides to quit his sports radio job and go into a fighting tournament. And if you've seen is it the Fighter movie where the guy's a teacher and ends up winning? I mean, he wins $1 million by beating the tar out of kids half his age and becomes a world champion and changes his life that moment. Really cool story, really cool guy. And I'll put you in touch with him.
Yeah, no, that'd be, stoked. I love good stories.
I have a lot of names I could go, but Sean was the one that came to mind.
No, love it. Yeah. Sounds like the perfect person to have. And he has not been on here yet. So
cool.
Safe. And then secondly, if people want to, follow you, listen to the show, what's the best place to find you in the show or listen in?
Yeah. I mean, for the sports stuff, I am, on air every day. So if you listen to ESPN 700 or our website or wherever you listen to radio podcasts, everyone does it differently.
True.
You can tune in live. You can go onto Spotify, Apple Podcasts and search for The Drive. And I do The Daily Show with Spence. Spence Check It's over there from 2 to 6 every day. That's live where you catch it in the podcast. And then, I'm online on Twitter at @Larson_ESPN. Instagram is a lot more of we talked about the outdoor stuff. I pretty much just post pictures of Utah and the wildlife.
Oh, and they're great
there.
Pictures.
So, that's just Porter Larson, my name. It's super easy, but you won't really find much like coverage there. It's just my
go to the Twitter sphere. That's the better place for it anyway.
Yeah. At least the real updates.
Yeah. No, I mean, Porter, thanks for coming in. I learned so much. Hopefully if you're anybody who's been curious about what's going on with everything, you have a little bit more of some data points around it, and we have a lot to look forward to. So it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming on and excited to have the best run of sports that we could possibly have for the next 10 years.
Thanks for having me, man. I'm looking forward to it. It should be really exciting. Like if you're a sports fan in Utah, the next decade and a half, I think, are going to be really, really interesting, but I don't necessarily know what that means from like a competitive level. Like these teams are in like peculiar positions, and they can go one of two directions, right? The post Kyle Whittingham era, the pre-Olympics era, the first years of an NHL franchise, and then the Jazz trying to find something, the first time really since Jerry Sloan. And of course, Quinn Snyder had that little run, but there's a lot of storylines that are really, really intriguing and can go in one of many directions. So it's going to be fun, and we're going to be along for the ride.
So excited to be a part of it too.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Salt Lake City Podcast. Don't forget to like, follow, review, subscribe, and share this episode with your friends. And we'll catch you next week. We'll see you there.